Awesome. Thank you for those people who joined us over the internet on BBS Radio. A bunch of people here on the phone line, on the conference call. Somebody else joined in. Welcome to the call. If you want to, please say your name and location.
Yeah, Rick, Iowa City.
Good morning. Welcome to the call, or good afternoon.
Hi.
Hello, welcome to the call. Please say your name and location. Well, we welcome you. Thank you for being here. Good morning. Welcome to the conference call. Please say your name and location.
Hi. Good morning. This is Roger in Austin.
I hear Roger in Austin. Welcome to the call, Roger. And I hear also Zoe. Hi, Zoe. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Hello, Zoe.
Francis here.
Hi, Francis.
Hi.
And we had somebody else join in the call. Please say your name and location.
Hello, this is Teresa calling from Granger, Indiana.
Hi, Teresa. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Hey, Teresa, you're the one that had that awesome experience, right?
Absolutely. I sent you a very detailed email. And
I read it.
Okay. This whole week, I mean, this started a week ago on Sunday, and this whole week has been absolutely phenomenal. It's changed my whole life, and I feel 150% better than when I did when before I started all of this. And I'm just thrilled.
Hey, listen, don't say this now. Wait till we start the recorder. We like to get that.
Oh, okay, sorry. I'm glad to say it again.
How long have you been coming to our calls?
I found you on the George Norrie show about 8 or 9 months ago. And I started coming on a Sunday call, and then I realized that...
Wait a second. Don't say this. I'll ask you when we start the recorder. It sounds too
good. Okay.
Let me first greet those people who just came in. Thank you guys for being here. And I want to please say your name and location.
John Steinmiller, Edmonton, New York.
Hi, John. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
All right. I love that, those things. Good morning, all. Welcome to the call. If you want to please say your name and location.
Hi, my name is Carolyn, and I'm calling from Sacramento.
Hi, Carolyn. Welcome to the call.
Hi, how are you?
Fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm a little better. I'm still healing from pneumonia, but I am better. I really am.
Great. Well, here. Oh, who is here? Good morning. Welcome to the call, Carla.
Hey there.
How are you?
Hey, Carla.
Hi, Carla.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, Carla.
Hi,
nice to have you.
Wonderful to be here.
It's so good to hear your voice again.
Oh, thank you so much. Good to hear you.
How are you? We all love you.
Well, real quick, I'm fine. I've been through a lot.
Carla,
don't
say it now. Say it after we start the tape recorder.
I'll tell you in a while.
Oh, like in the meantime, I'll greet those people who just came in. Rock to the call if you want to please say your name and location.
Hi, Steve. South Carolina.
Rock to the call.
Hi. Good morning.
You know, Hi's. They're coming in droves. Hi's. You hear me?
Yes, I do.
You know, I thought what happened with Willow was very interesting.
I think so too.
It might be interesting to try that.
Yeah.
To let anyone who wants to greet somebody, if there's a pause and hi's or I don't fill it, just come in and say, hi, this is Willow. Would you like to say your name and your city?
Hey, Willow was doing a great job.
But anybody,
thank you so much. Yeah.
You know, I thought hi's was just doing a great imitation.
but that way everyone starts to greet people. You guys like that idea?
Yeah.
I like it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, hi, yeah. Derek in Phoenix.
Hi, Derek. Welcome to the call.
Good morning, all you lovely people. It's Jim from Sedona.
Hi, Jim. Good morning.
Hello, Jim.
Good morning.
Good morning,
Jim.
Love that voice.
Oh, you're so...
voice. It's a Ted Baxter voice.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you.
Never been called love.
Oh, if you guys heard me sing last night, you would have said the same thing.
Is it David?
Yes, sir.
Sing to us now.
Now, no one's coming in and greeting people. Hi. Let's...
San Francisco.
Lisa, good morning.
Good morning, hi.
All right.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. People need practice, huh?
Practice does make perfect.
All right, in this moment of silence, I greet all those who have joined in. If there are still people who have not announced themselves, please...
Hi, this is Susan from Mesa.
Hi, Susan. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Hi, Don. Drexel. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Don. Susan, in Mesa, you know, one day, maybe next week, I'm going to drive down to Phoenix.
You are?
And I'm going to invite all the people from Phoenix. Eric is kind of coordinating this. But it's just going to be really casual. I'm not going to talk or lecture. I'm just going to have everybody...
Where are you going to meet?
I think we're going to meet...
Yeah, I'll just have to pay for the meal.
Yeah, you have to buy my meal.
Careful, Susan. You'll have to buy at Denny's.
Give donations. I think we're going to meet at Wildflowers in Scottsdale. Because they have a little meeting room in the back, which they'll give us for free if we spend $50 total.
Yeah,
that
what time
way,
of day?
Probably in the evening, like on a Tuesday or a Thursday, okay? It could be.
Will you email that out, or how are we going to find out?
Well, email me right away and say I want to come.
Okay.
Okay? Just respond. And then I'll forward that to Eric so he coordinates it, okay?
Perfect. Thank you.
I don't think I'm going to send it to the whole group. I'm going to send it to the people that, you know, come to the calls that are... You know,
let me mute.
Okay. All right.
Do you ever visit Northern California? This is Julia.
I haven't for a while. You know, I'm trying this in Phoenix. You know, now the problem is it's very expensive. Phoenix happens to be 100 miles from Sedona, and it's fairly easy to do it. You know, there's two ways that I can visit someplace. One place is to do a big lecture and try to get all kinds of people to it and try to cover my costs, which I usually can do, but it's a lot of work. And usually I just cover my costs. And, you know, the other way is... to go somewhere, like to meet in a free meeting room, so there's not a lot of expenses. And, you know, if I had more money coming in, I would do things like this, because I know it's a great service to be able to put people together in the same cities and get them to network with each other. But yeah. I have to get more successful, or somebody who's listening has to be a patron and say, we're going to donate some money to your cause so I can afford that. Otherwise, I can't, you know? You know, the idea is to visit a place and let people meet each other. Get a group of people that network with each other. And then if I do something bigger, there's a support group and a community already being built. But would you like to say your name and your city? This is Wynn.
Hey, Wynn, this is Dyke. Listen, are you familiar with meetups?
Yeah.
And that is, I just went to the Intuitive Awakening group. It's a great place to get the local community started in different places. I think what you're doing is awesome, and I congratulate you.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's like, let's suppose we go do a thing in Phoenix, and people like each other, which is a big accomplishment. And then they could meet at that same restaurant, which has a free meeting room, and then they can start a meetup and put it out so other people can come.
Perfect.
You know?
Perfect.
But it's kind of like a trial balloon to see if we can make something happen like that.
Yeah.
Starting in Phoenix is just good because it's when there. Hi, is this Terry on the line?
I think so. Let me check. Hold on.
She was earlier.
Terry, are you
hello,
there?
Man.
Yes.
Terry. Hello, Terry. Are you unmuted?
Okay, these earphones aren't working. I'm on the line.
Are you on the line? What, your earphones are not working?
Apparently not. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, she's only got a bachelor's degree. She's working for the PhD.
No, I got a master's degree, but I need the PhD.
No, I mean a bachelor's degree in unmute university.
Oh, I see. I see.
You don't need the pull there.
I don't know why, yeah. But you... Earphones are muted.
Now, Terry, you need to learn to when he does that and teases you, you learn to send some things back.
Yeah.
Oh, we're gonna...
Terry means to say I need to go to clean up the bedroom university.
Lynn can be on in the same class as me.
Yeah, when you get to go do the dishes university.
Well, luckily we have a PhD in doing the dishes here.
Jim's already graduated in that.
I thought Lynn's was leave it on the counter.
You guys don't know this. By the way, we haven't officially started yet. If anyone's listening, this is if you're listening for the first time, and we sound giggly, it didn't start out this way. It's over a period of a couple years. People come in, they get to know each other, and not only that, they get to share spirit on this line, and you'll see what that feels like as we go on. But suddenly. All the patterns of feeling alienated and separated and all that stuff start to dissipate. And then the people get on early and they have fun because those patterns are gone. And, Terry, did you hear that? I'm not going to start talking. We'll start officially. It's 10:12. And just a moment.
I want to say hello to Carla and Teresa.
Hello,
Michael.
Sir.
Michael. Great. Carla.
Yeah, I want to thank you all who sent me cards and stuff. They were just so lovely and really lifted me up.
Now, we just sent you a present, you know.
I can't wait.
You're going to really like it.
Okay.
Let me unmute Michael.
Finally got that copy of Lady Chatterley's Lover to me, huh? That's a joke, guys.
Great to have you back, Carla.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
This conference is being recorded.
Now, all of you who are listening on the internet and listening on the replay lines, you've been missing out on, well, those of you on the internet have been sharing our little repartee that goes on before we officially start the call. And we felt you, and we didn't hear you, but you heard us. This is Winfrey. This is May 26th, Sunday. And this is our, what do we call it? We call it a planetary healing session, grid healing session. And it's a time when we get together and share in the experience of what group energy really feels like. And not just group energy on a human level, but we could call it cosmic group energy. Group energy where we all affiliate our energies. I won't say all, but those of you that have desired to do so, that have learned how to do it just by showing up on these calls, and that's a huge accomplishment in this realm, learning to feel group energy, especially with a bunch of people who you can't see their bodies. I guess that's really the accomplishment, you know. It's like we all feel group. Well, I won't say we all, but most of us feel group energies, and in our lives, one time or another, whether it's attending a concert or sitting in a coffee shop and feeling the ambience, it's all group energy. But cosmic group energy is fairly uncommon, where people come together and they not only feel each other, but we have these invisible forces. And this is something that you have to draw your own conclusions about. I believe we have these invisible sources that join us in the group energy. And what's unusual on this call is that not only do we have those invisible sources joining us, but at some point in the call, they'll say hello through Terry. Now, it's all kind of crazy, except it happens every Sunday, and there's a lot of magic that happens on this call, and a lot of people go through growing into the experience that they want to have in their life. I mean, what do we want to have? We want to feel great. We want to get up in the morning and feel like, wow, I'm expanded. I feel good inside. And that can be a challenge, especially for what we call wanderers. And the reason, you know why it's such a challenge for a wanderer? Because I would be willing to bet that most of you on this call fit into that category. And I believe that the word wanderer was first used by the Ra group when they spoke through Carla Ruckert. Is that true, Carla? Am I right on that?
I believe that there was a fellow back in the 30s and wrote a book called The Wanderers. I read it in the Library of Congress doing research on that very thing. I don't remember his name, sorry. But he was talking about, literally, wanderers. He was talking about people that can't find a place to land in this world. And he never got beyond this earth. But it's the first time that we have heard it coming through the Confederation channels like the Ra group and the Latwi group.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about wanderers first, I think, before anybody else picked up the term. George Hunt Williams had called them apples because the phrase that he got from using radio telegraphy was, to the apples we salt, we shall return. And I had to look that up, but salting is a way of preserving fruit used in the Middle Ages and by, you know, people that don't have electricity and so forth everywhere. And it meant that they had seeded the earth with us. We have a job to do, and they shall return to help us with it. So we're wanderers, we're apples.
You know the difference between a wanderer and a starseed?
I don't. Do you?
Yes.
Tell me.
Well, you know, there are all kinds of interdimensional beings that come in and take bodies in this realm, okay? And millions of them from the Ra group, multi-millions, and the Ra group calls them wanderers. And wanderers are beings that are old souls that have had many, many lifetimes that have graduated this realm and that have chosen to come back here and be of service. And invariably, when they get born, and, you know, they choose a parent and they get born, they don't remember that they chose to come back here to be of service. They just say, duh, where am I? And as they're going through their life, as they're getting older, they tend to feel very estranged because they don't fit. Things don't intrigue them. Because they graduated this realm, they've been there and done that, and they came to be of service, but usually, now, in some cases, they really might have picked some extraordinary parents, and that might have helped them get aligned, but usually, they end up being estranged and alienated because things don't fit for them, and they... according to Carla's raw material, 90% of all those beings that come in from higher realms and take bodies here get lost again. And then they get caught up in reincarnation and karma because it's so easy to do that here. You know, you feel alienated, and then you compromise yourself. You don't even know you're compromising yourself, but you end up sleeping with the wrong person, so to speak. Or you're desperate, and you do something dishonest, et cetera, et cetera. And before you know it, you're caught. You're caught in the energies of this realm, and now... You can get even disabled from the potential of doing your highest purpose because you get all involved in the karma of what you get caught up in. And that's a wanderer. And do you go along with that, Carla? I better, since she's just about made up the word. Or,
I do.
Yeah, I said that right. So, you know, many of you into that category, and that you're very sensitive to the energies of the higher dimensions, and you feel them on the line, or you intuit the connection. We say something and it resonates, and you're going, F me. And suddenly you finally found a place to call home or to resonate with, to wake up that sleeping seedling that was your original birthright that got lost. And you might wonder, why do beings that graduate this realm, why in the world would they ever choose to come back here? Because I would assume that when you're up there and you're not here, you probably know the risks involved in coming here and that there's a good chance you'll get lost again. And the reason you do it and the reason you made that choice is because if this didn't happen and if even the few people that wake up or the small percentage that wakes up know they never came here, this realm would be owned by the negative. And everyone would be enslaved. That's what would happen. So it was kind of an act of great sacrifice to come here and get lost. And, you know, I remember someone who was a teacher of mine years ago, he said something that was really profound that I thought about for a long time. And I really understand it now, but I didn't understand it when he said it. And what he said was that, you know, he had all these people in a spiritual group, and it was a rather sophisticated group, and there were very prosperous people in it, and there were some actors and famous people in it. And what he said was that there's guys on Skid Row that were more evolved than some of the people in the room. and I understand it, because wanderers, people that are like that, need freedom. And sometimes the only way they can find the freedom they need is to be homeless. And there's a lot, there can be a lot of freedom in being homeless. And I remember, I've mentioned this, when I was younger and I used to hitchhike around the country, that's when I first discovered my birthright and when I first felt free inside of myself. I had never, ever felt free. I felt constrained, contracted, trapped. Jobs were all boring. Everything I did was boring, and it didn't intrigue me. And then when I was hitchhiking, I let go of the traps of this realm. And suddenly, every day was like a miracle, miracles of synchronicity. And I remember when I first stepped into that, I couldn't believe it. I said, this can't be real. How can this be working? And you know, what happened would be, I wanted to go back and tell people, and every time I did that, I would lose it, because suddenly I wasn't in a flow. I was wanting recognition. And so then I just have to disappear and start hitchhiking again. And you know, there's at least, I'm trying to think, there's at least one person on this line, and she's listening. Hi, Ariel. She's a very high being in her own way, and she reminds me very much of how I was when I was hitchhiking, because she, for periods of her life, I don't recommend anyone doing this, okay? I mean, this is my experience, and it's not going to work for everybody. Probably wouldn't work for most people. But for Ariel, for a period of her life, she would be in truck stops and just go where the next trucker took her. And she would keep them company while they were driving. And then the keeping of the trucker company was her way of fulfilling her wanderer destiny, because it tapped into the higher aspects of herself. And then they'd drop her off, and she'd get another trucker picking her up. And she'd spend months doing this, and she was having synchronicities and probably loads of truck drivers that were loving her. And, you know, it was nothing exalted. It was very simple. But I could feel how it worked for her. I don't, you know, most people would have thought she was totally insane. And she listens to our calls all the time. I know it helps her keep it together. So I I said I was going to say what a star seed was. Star seeds, at least in the way that I'm using this word, and other people may use it differently, are entities that come into this realm from the Elohim level. And they have a very different dispensation than beings that come in from the Ra level. And for one thing, the beings that come in from the Elohim level have much more potential to go negative in this realm. That doesn't mean they do, but they have the potential because they have the inherent ability to rearrange the reality around them. And they don't even know they're doing it. They just know they have power. And if they play their power card and they start making themselves comfortable by rearranging reality, they can then see the people, other people, as their potential slaves or manipulations. And so, biblically, they were the fallen angels. And that doesn't mean they all do that, but they can do that. An Elohim starseed, and I'd asked some questions about this a long time ago, and it was very fascinating. An Elohim starseed has much more, it's much more important for them to have a home and a family than it is for a Ra wanderer. And the reason is they're coming from such a high celestial place that they need those things to be grounded. It's one of the things, if some of you remember, that early on, if you read the Creator God book, that I was asked to go to Mesa, Arizona, when I was first with Daphne, because I would find a group there that had affinity with the work I was doing. And when I got to Mesa, I didn't go with Daphne, I went with Terry, and they ended up sending me to a Mormon church by street name. I mean, we were only there for a weekend, and I was looking in the phone book, in the yellow pages, for how am I going to find someone in Mesa, Arizona, that has affinity with my work? And, of course, I was thinking in terms of New Age. I was thinking in terms of channeling. I was looking for metaphysical bookstores, and then I opened the yellow pages, and I was looking for woo-woo churches, Church of the Liquid Light and Love, and I found out that Mesa happened to be a Mormon town, and it was one of the early outposts in the 1800s of the Mormons when they moved to Salt Lake City. And there I was with Terry looking at all these Mormon churches, and in a previous session, when they said the word Elohim, I Googled the word Elohim, and it said it was one of the word for God that the Mormons used. So I remembered that, and I saw all these Mormon churches, and I asked them, you don't mean for me to introduce myself to the Mormons? And they said, not the entire church. There's a group here that will connect with you. And so I ended up, I asked them, I said, there's 60 churches and I'm only here for one more day. Can you give a recommendation? And they said, go to the church on Blankety Blank Street. And I went into the yellow pages and I remember thinking, oh, I'll bet there's no church on that street. I was only like a year into having these conversations. And I was trying to make it real for myself. It just seemed so sci-fi. But sure enough, there was a church on Blankety Blank Street, and it was Sunday morning, and I went there, introduced myself to the bishop after the service, and he invited me into office, and I told him, actually, I think he thought he had a convert. I said, I came all the way from L.A. to be here. Do you have time to talk to me? He took me into his office and listened to me for 2 hours. And finally he said, Wynn, I'm not going to say there's anything wrong in what you're saying to me. Mormons believe that anyone can be a prophet. And then he said, would you be willing to tell your story to some of my church members? And I said, sure. And so Terry was still back at Motel 6. I called her up and I said, do you think you can take off from work tomorrow? And we went to somebody's house, and I sat there with a few people, and Terry now came with me, and I told the story again. And at the end of telling this story, or in the middle of it, Terry interrupted. Now, at that time, Terry was not a very, how would I say it? Some of you remember this who are listening. When Terry would channel, she would say, wait a moment, and then we'd have to wait 3 minutes, and then she'd come back and have something to say, and then she'd say, wait a moment. And so I brought Terry with me, and no way was I expecting to do a channeling, and I thought it would be improper to do it. I mean, I thought this was just, you know, the idea that I was talking to the same Elohim that their scriptures referred to, I thought they'd never believe it or they wouldn't accept it. But here I was talking to a group of Mormons. So in the middle of me talking, Terry interrupted and she said, there's something they want me to say. And everyone hushed up. And I remember thinking, what did I bring her for? What in the world are they going to say? So Terry, all she said was one sentence. And she said, they wanted you to know that they're hearing your prayers. And there wasn't a dry eye in the room. Everyone started tearing. And I left that session. I left that. And as I was driving off, I remember thinking, and it was kind of an epiphany, but it was, I just remember thinking, oh my God, maybe they are who they say they are. Because I could not believe that I have two women in a row tapping me on the shoulder saying, those guys want to talk to you. And I'm talking to this group soul that created the universe. That was the name for God in the Old Testament and the New Testament. And, of course, I had studied the Ra material. And the Ra material always says, be careful. The negative can say they're anybody. Don't, you know, be careful of channeling. And so I was thinking to myself, how do I know they are who they say they are? And, I mean, I remember at the time, Carla and I had been in phone connection. This was in a period of 2002 to 2003. And, I mean, I was very insecure about it. And I would send her these sessions, but I didn't know what she thought when I sent them to her. She's on the line, so she may say. But in any case, I was trying to have some kind of confidence, but I didn't have a negative source. And so we... Going to Mesa was kind of my detective work to say, let's see what happens here. I mean, it was a big deal. We were living in L.A. It was 500 miles to Mesa. Terry was working. So we left after work on Friday. We had to be back on Sunday night. We ended up stretching it till Monday. And we spent 3 days in Mesa. And I'm thinking, maybe they are who they say they are. So after that, I'm wondering, why did they send me there? What did they expect would happen? And I started asking lots of questions about Mormons. And it turns out, at least from the answers I got, the general idea was that... the Elohim's idea in the formation of that religion was to create a venue where Elohim souls could incarnate into this realm, and they'd have a religion or a doctrine or a dogma that would help them not get lost, that they wouldn't become negative, because they didn't come into the realm thinking they were going to be negative when they got here. It's just that once you're here, you don't remember anything, and you have power over people. And if you play the power card, you can make your life more comfortable, but now you're negative, okay? And so the idea was the firstborn of all the Mormons were Elohim souls, if I have it right. And that the idea was to create a liaison between the cosmic Elohim, the celestial Elohim, and the Elohim that were coming into this realm, and kind of do something similar to what we're doing now, creating that kind of liaison, co-creation, cooperation, to do that in that church. And as I learned over time, like almost all churches, the connection got corrupted. And the Elohim souls here were not getting anyone to create the connection or verbal messages from the celestial Elohim. And, but you know, if you look at the Mormons, you know, because I kind of ran this through my logical mind, because I'm still very skeptical. I was skeptical. And it was all so far out that I couldn't believe it just because they said it. But then I started looking at Mormons, and I said, what do you have here? You have a group of people that take care of each other better than any other religion on the planet. They were a group soul. They were really tight in the other realms. So they reiterated that tightness by taking care of each other. I mean, Mormons, I have a friend that's a Mormon, and if she ran out of money, as long as she was in good standing with the church, they would pay her rent. That's how far they go in taking care of somebody. So they take care of each other. If you look at Mormons, you'll find they're very attractive people because they're new souls in this realm. And I always say, look at Donnie and Marie Osmond are a very good example, I think, of Elohim souls in this realm. And they have that exuberance and that love that just pours out of them. Now, let's just say when they were younger. I mean, they both have gone through all kinds of stuff, divorces, children being gay. I think one of them had a child that did suicide. I can't remember. You see how they get caught up in this realm. But when they were younger and you looked at their beautiful angelic radiance and their great singing and the joy they would create, you can see how the Elohim energy would manifest through two people in this realm. The other thing about Mormons is they are extremely good at making a plan and sticking to it, i.e., they become very successful in business. Probably more so than raw wanderers who are restless, and they're focused. They radiate outwards. You see, the Elohim is at the center, and they radiate out. So, and then by the way, when I asked the questions further, they said 30% of Mormons at this point were Elohim souls, because a lot of people converted who were not. And the last thing about Mormons, if you happen to know any, and if they fit the profile that I'm creating, they have no wisdom or very little wisdom of this realm. Whereas the Elohim have tremendous wisdom from observing this realm for trillions of years, even though they never took bodies. They have vicarious wisdom. Apparently, that wisdom gets lost if they come in here and take a body. Unlike the wisdom of the Ra group, which was earned through the school of hard knocks over lots and lots of lifetimes, where the wisdom gets embedded in the soul. And so an Elohim soul in this realm doesn't have the wisdom of the realm. It's one of the reasons that not only can they become negative, but they can be easily taken over by the negative because they don't have the discernment to figure it out. And it's a very interesting realization. It's why Mormons have, you know, almost always have big homes. They have families. They're tight with each other. And the Ra group wanderers tend to be loners, alienated, and having to recreate it in this realm. It's a fascinating look at the difference between starseeds and wanderers. When you look at people and you're trying to figure out the difference, you know, even when I was younger, I was trying to figure this out because there were certain people that just seemed angelic and radiant. And I said, how come I'm not? I'll never be angelic and radiant like that. And you don't have to be a Mormon to be an Elohim soul in this realm. And I'm sure there's, since the universe operates on free will, I'm sure there's many, many instances of Elohim souls in this realm, but not as much as the Ra group. Many more instances of the Ra group. So Elohim souls in this realm, by the definition of the Elohim used in our early conversations, would be called starseeds. And therefore, they can come in here, and they have the potential to radiate out from their center and create things from radiating out, whereas a Ra group person has to co-create. Let me see. I'm not saying they won't have that ability, but I used Donnie and Marie Osmond as an example of an Elohim starseeds, which many of you remember them and can tune into them. And even George Romney, even though I'm not saying he's not corrupted, I think he is, but nonetheless, he's good looking. You can feel that quality of centeredness in him, even if it's going towards the wrong direction. Now, I said that, I'm going to get all these political things. Sorry, just deflect on that. Don't send me any emails. If you love George Romney, then that was just my opinion. It doesn't have to do with the call. But if we want to look at a Ra wanderer, I would say you could pick Bob Dylan as a Ra wanderer. And if you look at his early songs, not his later songs, because I think even Bob Dylan got caught up in the fame and the glamour and the girlfriends and the money, but in his early songs, they were like channelings. They were so exquisitely put together. And even he, on an interview, he was one of my big inspirations. I would be growing up, and I would listen to Bob Dylan, and it was like talking right through inside of me. And you can see, look at Bob Dylan's persona. You know, he would travel all the time. Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger, all those old folk singers, I would put them in the category of Ra wanderers. Leonard Cohen. And myself, I would certainly be a Ra wanderer because part of me has the intrinsic wisdom of this realm because I've had all these lifetimes. And even in spite of having all these lifetimes and in spite of having that potential wisdom, it took me years to figure it out. I was totally screwed up. And all I, you know, for many years, all I wanted to do was say, what am I doing this job for? Why can't I go out and hitchhike? Because eventually I said, after about spending about 4 or 5 years traveling around the country, I had this thing that said, I'm supposed to get my life together. I'm supposed to get married. I'm supposed to have a job, you know. And I went through that. And, you know, now that I'm doing this work, even when I was writing music, there was part of me that said, I don't want to be, part of me was, I was really good songwriter. But there was, I remember there was a part of me that says, I don't want to get caught up getting famous. What am I going to do? And it's not till I really started doing what I'm doing now that I can be centered in one place and feel like I don't have to go looking for something. And in fact, what we're doing is creating an anchoring center point, and other people are having the synchronicities. I don't need to go out and have, I mean, I'm not against synchronicities. I'm happy to sit next to a guy in a lobby of a hotel who makes movies and gets wanting, you know, maybe that'll happen. But that's a synchronicity. But it's more important to stay in the center of this so that you can have synchronicities, that you can be out there making things happen. Because the level of contribution to the planet is so much greater as all of you get more centered, more into your realization of your own divine nature, and learn how to express it. And I remember, you know, when I was first doing all this stuff, and some of you I know I was getting little dream messages. One of my favorite dream messages at that time, which I didn't understand. I mean, understand that what we're doing now has developed and is still developing, and it will always develop. It can't not develop because we're a part of each other and we're in motion, we're in flow. So all the time, new possibilities come in, new people come in. It's going to be in those of you that have learned to anchor the energies right now. It's like there's going to be a point, and it may be the next time I'm on George Norrie, it may be some other way, where suddenly 20,000 people are coming in, and you are going to help hold the energy for those people. You will you don't have to. But your service will be so much greater because you've learned how to anchor it. And the next step is facing outwards. We can't just face each other. At a certain point, we have to turn around and we support each other's backs, but we have to face outward. And each of you is going to be doing your own manifestation. And some of you are doing it anyway. You don't have to do it within this group. You're just changing, and your universe is recreating, and there's new possibilities and new potentials for you and new things flowing towards you that weren't flowing towards you before. And part of this is just visualizing it and keeping your energy up high enough so that it's above the miasms of this realm, and then, boom, you're there. Doing it in our group is easier because we've created, it may not be easier. It depends on who the person is. Some people need to do things totally from their own creation, and being part of anything in a group contracts them. They need to do bigger than that. And other people, the group is supportive. So it's very hard to get this kind of support in this realm.
You know, when listening to that, I wanted to affirm what you're saying. But I was looking back at how we managed to pull in the raw contact in 81. I had been channeling since 74. I started channeling pretty well by 75. I went through a really intense learning period, figuring out the things that I could manage to have control of. And I created an understanding and a protocol for my own preparation for a channeling session. All important is that the person that's channeling be tuned. And we're not normally tuned that way. We're normally tuned more for the world. And when you're tuned for channeling, we have to be tuned to our highest and best in terms of our spirituality. So I had learned that, and I had learned how to keep fear from ruining the session by refusing to take questions about the future or by refusing to take questions that were steeped in fear. Questions of will it happen, that kind of thing. But I went on for years and really producing good material. If you read the early stuff, it's very uplifting. It's very helpful. But when Jim came and joined Don and me, now you have to look at this triangle here. I was so close to Don that Don was almost channeling with me. He was asking questions, but there was an energy drain that we could not fix. When Jim came to the group, he was very powerful in his basic, he's just basically a good Boy Scout, never wavered from it, never broke promises. Jim's the kind of saint on earth, and goes unseen, but he is. And that power, that spiritual power that he has and had from the beginning, and he never knew it, translated into our being able to boost our signal. And that's how the Ra group found us. They were able to find that signal, and I was beaming on hit their level. So I was compatible with them, and they were able to come through. And they spoke a couple different times about how rare it was and how unique we were, because we didn't have any negativity between the three of us at any time. But always since, I've noted how important it is to have batteries in the group. The Christian people don't talk much about batteries, but the people that have seance, the spiritualists, talk about having batteries. And it just ups the signal so that you can penetrate the mists of of miasma that are, along our earth and penetrate through to the higher spheres and find a channeling source that is a really good match for you as a channel. So I am ever thankful to my beautiful husband. I call him Mick, Jim Mick Carty. As I said, batteries go unseen and unappreciated for the most part. They sit in a circle. They go, wasn't that a wonderful session? And they don't realize how much help they've been because there are other people in the group, and they don't feel that anything's been taken from them. They're getting so much back, and they'll go away happy. But without the batteries, the channel is unlikely to be able to work nearly as effectively as when there are batteries. And I think, when for you, that translates into, as more people come into this ministry of yours, we won't call it an unlikely ministry, not a Christian ministry, not any kind of religious ministry, but a ministry nonetheless, to the people that want to wake up and want to find a place to do that. They're learning how to be batteries. And as you said, wind goes on George Nuri, everybody tune in and beam him your light, because that battery power will work even though you're not in the same place.
That's right. Did my explanation of starseeds and wanderers make sense to you?
Yeah, it's a difference between angels and men.
Like, I would say, and I don't know,
Elohim are an angelic breed, whereas the wanderers are simply those that have learned their lessons here, gone on to serve in the positive sense, and then notice the cry of sorrow of the people of Earth, and heeded that call. They sometimes call themselves the brothers and sisters of sorrow.
Like Jim probably has more has some qualities of a starseed. You know, more angelic.
Mm-hmm. He may have, and he's a good-looking man.
Yeah,
all those things.
He's good-looking. He's angelic. You know,
but he's never connected with Earth. I mean, after he got through his master's degree, he thought, I don't want to do any of this stuff that I'm qualified for, and he went and bought land in Kentucky with money he saved up doing, you know, hard labor, putting concrete in silos and stuff, welding, and bought his land and built a log cabin on it and lived on beans and chapatis and, you know, wood for heat and, you know, the simplest, no electricity, no, he didn't even have an outhouse for years. He used a slit trench. He was in deep country. Nobody could see him. But he has more of the characteristics of a wanderer. But he would qualify as a starseed from the outer description of one. Good looking, easygoing, spreads joy wherever he is, makes people feel good.
And he's also able to hold a plan and stay focused. Just as you described how he worked hard labor. See, wanderer, if I was doing, I mean, I had so many little things I did to make money, you know. I mean, I'm qualified. You know, even when I was in high school, I got a commercial radio license. I was a ham radio operator. I was building transmitters in my bedroom from scratch.
Da-da-da-da.
How do you know
that's calling anybody?
And I mean, I would come home from school, and it was so exciting because I would be talking to people in Russia and in Israel and in all over the world. And I mean, I started a radio club. I was president of a radio club when I was in high school. And in my high school yearbook, it said Wynn could be seen walking through the aisles of the high school carrying large capacitors and batteries. You'll know it's him. And then they also said, this is very funny, there was a history class, and I would have trouble staying awake in classes. It was so boring. And there was this one high school teacher I had. His name was Irving Cohan, Dr. Cohan, history teacher. And at least once a week, he'd throw an eraser at me to wake me up. And they put that in my yearbook. So, I mean, I was trying to figure out, what am I doing here? And I thought, well, I have all this aptitude to build things and understand electricity and electronics, that I would be an electrical engineer. And then I upgraded to be a physics major. And then I was so restless. See, I couldn't. A starseed would just pull all those things off and become the top in his field. But I was so restless because there was something that was in me that I didn't know what it was, but everything was boring. I mean, I would master it, and it would be boring. And it wasn't until I started writing songs and hitchhiking around the country that I snapped. And I said, why do I want to do this when I'm qualified? I mean, my family thought I was absolutely crazy, okay? I mean, here I was, and of course, I was very smart. And I came from a Jewish family, and of course, you know, smart.
I'm the conference holder.
I remember on one of my first trip around the country was actually, I did it with my girlfriend. There was this woman I met on the Berkeley campus, and we kept having synchronistic meetings, and she ended up being being my first real girlfriend. And at the time, I was just starting to write lyrics and songs. And and when I met her, I played some of my stuff for her, but I couldn't sing at all. I mean, I was closed up. My chakras were closed up. And she said, "Oh, wow, you're brilliant. You're this." Like, it's the first time I got acknowledgement from someone for being something, you know, other than a smart electronics guy. And so she and I started, she said, "I can sing. I used to sing in church choir." And she was this little lady from New Zealand. And she started singing my songs. And then the two of us ended up in a rocket doing a rock and roll band. And then we ended up being a duo. And we had this little Volkswagen bus. And we would travel around the country in our little bus. She called it Bussy. And she was the person that introduced me to Edgar Cayce, to metaphysics, to astrology, because I was still in a linear state of mind, thinking everything, you know, that I could understand things in my mind. And her name was Jillian. We're still really good friends. And she lives in Southern California. We talk at least once or twice a month. And but when we started traveling around the country, it was at the time that hippies were just coming out in the news everywhere. And I had long hair down the back of my neck, and everyone was reading about hippies. And we would arrive in the city and go into the local bar and sing in between the bands. And they recognized us because we must have been those hippies from San Francisco. And so we got treated royally. You know, I mean, it was amazing. And we probably did that for 2 or 3 years, traveled around the country, and we had just the wildest adventures. And finally, we went back to Berkeley, and I said to myself, there's something I got to learn. I don't understand life. I need to understand life. You see, this is the wanderer restlessness, having to try to plug into something. They know there's something there, and they're trying to plug into it. And I needed to plug into it. And that's when I started hitchhiking. And I remembered walking down to University Boulevard in Berkeley with a big backpack. And I was scared. I mean, I said, what am I opening myself up to? And I remember saying to myself, okay, if there's a God, I need you to show yourself. I need to know God, because I didn't think I knew God then. I didn't know God then. I didn't know spirit. I was reading about metaphysics, and I was learning about that there was this universe out there that was that I knew was working, but I didn't integrate it into myself. And it wasn't until I started hitchhiking that I had that experience. You see, wanderers who had all these, this is another take on this, wanderers who have all this experience in this realm, if you're an advanced wanderer, the world is your home. You can be anywhere, and you can ground your energies because you've been everywhere. So I don't know if you guys realize it, but every place you've ever lived, if you're the least bit open to energies, you're still there. You can go recreate that city or that town, and your energy actually moves there. And so I was like learning this experience that I could travel, and I would plant myself. I'd end up somewhere. I'd be on somebody's couch. And one of the things that I did, one of the things that made this work, I wasn't just a vagabond. I had my guitar with me, and I had learned how to do astrology charts. And so wherever I would go, I would be either playing music, even in people's living rooms, or I would be doing astrology charts. And so I had a way to interface with my environment that made real energy. So I wasn't just a tourist. I would get into it. And I was writing the most phenomenal songs while I was doing this, because I said to myself, there's this alternative reality that nobody knows about. And I'm in the middle of it, and I'm sailing through it. And I was sharing it with people in little bits and pieces. It's that period of time that I wrote Dig the Spaces, because I said, I want to put this alternative reality into music and reach people with it. And, you know, it's like that went on for a long time, and then everything came to a huge halt for me. It's very interesting, because when I went to Los Angeles thinking I was a good enough songwriter to become successful, to become famous, I lost I now was thinking in terms of a job and a career. I wasn't thinking in terms of how do I give to people. And it's like that was my biggest mistake at that time. Because I look at some of the people that had inspired me, was like Pete Seeger. You know Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie? You're familiar with them, right?
Oh, sure. When I was a kid, I learned everything that Seeger had done, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet you you're one of the few people that I can say, don't you just absolutely love Pete Seeger's little album that just his banjo playing and his singing, and he does da 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 da. I can't remember the name of that, but it's a small long playing album, but I think it's 8 or 9 inches instead of 12 or 13, whatever they are. And I was just totally into that. Seeger still remains to me an absolute icon. He the way he lived his life and the way he gave, he still does, but he's lost his voice because of age. He can just sort of husk things out, and then everybody knows the songs and they all join in. That's how he does his concerts. But he spent his life going to places on his own dime a lot of the time, where, you know, union people were trying to organize, and singing and raising money to help them. Just an amazing giving person. And, you know, Peter, Paul, and Mary sang a song that they saw it, and it was Pete Seeger's handwriting. It was his song, and they just had a copy of it somehow. And it was one of the most, you know, I think it was, if I had a hammer,
mm-hmm.
I, you know, that one.
Well, mm-hmm.
they found out that it was Seeger's, so they gave all the royalties from that song to Seeger, and he says that, those royalties paid off his house.
Mm-hmm.
A wanderer indeed. He inadvertently was able to establish a home.
You know,
generosity of others.
We're talking about Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie, and they were two people that always gave of their art to the common man, always. And, you know, I it's interesting because last night I happened to be on YouTube, and I happened to end up on a couple of things of Pete Seeger's, and there was this thing on his 80th birthday or 90th birthday
mm-hmm.
where he was giving a concert at in Washington, D.C. I think it's the Lincoln Memorial with this huge crowd there. And I mean, I was getting tears as I was hearing some of his old songs. You know, I recommend, I might send a couple out in a mailing, but there was, I'm sure you remember, but you probably don't know, was Pete Seeger. The song that the Byrds did that made this song famous, Turn, 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 where he took one of the Psalms in the Bible, to everything, turn, 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 there is a season. Just beautiful lyrics and beautiful melody. Another one of his songs, I believe, was Where Have All the Flowers Gone?
Mm-hmm.
And
That was Peter's song.
Yeah, and one of Woody Guthrie's songs. Probably, I think this is Woody Guthrie. Maybe it's Pete Seeger, but I think it's Woody Guthrie. And since we're talking about Woody Guthrie, I'm sure you probably know who Arlo Guthrie is, his son who did Alice's Restaurant. Well, Woody Guthrie would go down and play for people in the Dust Bowl. There was all of this this big drought in somewhere in the Southwest, and
all over,
and people weren't eating, and were having trouble surviving, and he would just travel around, and supposedly he rode the railroads to get there, and probably his most famous song was "This Land Is Your Land," wasn't that Woody Guthrie?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, "This Land Is Your Land. This Land Is My Land."
California.
And he was. They were singing that at this big, tens of thousands of people, loads of people, at his 80th birthday in Washington, and I think Bruce Springsteen was there backing him up, and it was just touching. And you could see this man who had given so much to so many people. I think he was singing "This Land Is Your Land," which was a Woody Guthrie song. But in any case, you know, what I saw was that, you know, in retrospect, that I went and thought of myself as, okay, I'm a good songwriter. I went back to my career. I'm going to have a career in this. And I was really a man of the people. And I lost it in going to Hollywood. But maybe I lost it because years later I was supposed to do this. And if I did that, I would have probably never done this. And, you know, one of my early dream messages was, you finally found a job you won't get tired of. So... But you know, the other thing is, I finally found a job that I can never retire from. So, you know, it's the way it goes. In any case, you know, let's get on with some of the things we do all the time on Sundays. And we have a healing list, and we have a group energy, and we want to put our energies together to do some planetary intentions. And when we come together like this, we are doing something so extraordinary. And I don't like calling it a ministry, because that word.
I knew you wouldn't. I just knew that.
that word has all these old patterns attached to it, and I don't like to identify with a role, but I do know, in reality, not wearing a hat, we are affiliating ourselves with energies in other dimensions that have longed to make a difference in this realm and have such a hard time doing it, and have such a hard time, even when it starts, to have it not get corrupted. And we're doing this, and it's clean, and that you guys are tapping into it. And, you know, Carlo was saying that you're the batteries. Well, if you use the word battery, and you could use that word, but it sounds like I'm using your energy. And in that respect, I don't like the word battery, although it has certain
a certain meaning in this context.
Well, I think the thing about batteries is you are giving, you are being used, but once you're in a group, the energy of the group spins around and connects with all the auras of all those people present. And since the energy of that is doubled, you know, every time you get at a person, even in a small group, you have doubled that energy, say, 10 times or say.
Right, right.
And it's huge. So you're getting so much back that the sum is that everyone goes away plus in energy, plus in inspiration.
Right.
So it's a very accurate term in terms of how the battery plugs into the circle and gives it energy. But then once it gets started, you get so much back that it doesn't matter.
It's a rechargeable battery. Okay.
I like that.
because what happens is, you know, there's an Indian word called Tantra Yoga, and a lot of times people think of that as sexual, and it's one way of looking at it, and probably in the best kind of intimate exchange, people come together, and they come together because they feel empty inside, not necessarily, but oftentimes, and that this other person is holding the energy that they don't have, and vice versa. And so within intimacy, people give each other energy. There's huge energies moving back and forth between people. And if it's done in the best way, what happens is maybe one person is feeling empty and the other person is giving them energy. And then suddenly they don't feel empty anymore. And then they say, I'm going to give back to this person in gratitude for what they gave to me. And then they give back, and the other person starts feeling full. And then they have more to give. And before you know it, they're operating in one energy. They're not two energies anymore, and they can hold one energy between them in a very uplifted space. Now, they're still totally separate beings, but it's a very empowering relationship. And that idea of giving energy back and forth is what the Hindus call Tantra Yoga. But it really works on a much wider expanse than sex and intimacy, because to a certain extent, all of us, you can't do your life without giving and receiving energy. And the key is that where it becomes a problem is where you give energy and give energy, and the person you're giving it to or the group you're giving it to doesn't give it back to you. And after a while, you feel empty. And in a negative relationship, let's just say between a man and a woman, often the woman starts out as the nurturer, and she'll give it to the man, and the man starts feeling fulfilled, and suddenly he feels empowered, and he feels fulfilled, so he can go out and attract other things to him. So he'll take the energy he's getting from the woman and then start having affairs or other relationships and giving it because he can attract them because he's fulfilled. And then the woman starts feeling empty, and they lose it. They lose the ability to have that sacred, Christed relationship when the energy comes back and forth. So I know when I started doing these calls some years ago, I didn't know how it was going to flow or what was going to happen. And initially, I was giving energy to the group all the time, and a lot of energy was not coming back. Or if I go do a talk and there's a bunch of new people in the room, let's suppose I'm doing a talk at an expo, it's like I can be really, how can I say, charismatic or compelling in front of a group. But when I walk off stage and I go home, I sleep for 3 days because there wasn't energy coming back. And what's happening on these calls is that we are all having that relationship where we're giving energy, you're giving energy back, we're giving energy, you're giving energy back, and we build the energy. So now the call actually starts an hour before the call. People are coming in on the line. They're having fun with each other. They're having that energy, and they're meeting each other at a higher place than they normally do. And so we're each other's batteries here, and we're recharging each other. And in the group aura, it's helping to heal us all. It's 11:24. This is what happens when Carla's on, okay? Because we lose what we're supposed to do. But the point is, we don't have anything we're supposed to do. So, but I know that it makes a difference to do these things. I know we're sharing this, and I know that many of you are still going through struggles. You're going through feeling alienated. You're finding some support in this energy. And it's my wish that every one of you can learn to heal those parts of yourself and get the keys to move yourself up from that and attract the things in your life that fulfill you, attract the healings in your life, attract the jobs, attract the sense of purpose. And sometimes that happens. Therese, are you on the line? 2-6 if you're here. Therese.
Carla, I love you.
I love you right back, guys.
Therese, are you there?
I'm here, Wynn.
Now, I'm using Therese as an example. She sent me an email a couple days ago, and she's having all these amazing experiences, and she's been paying attention to us for about 8 or 9 months when she heard us on George Norrie. And, you know, I tell people, you have to hang in with this. It's like we all come to the table with our patterns, our hurts, our fears, our pains, our karma, and that there's an energy here that can help you work those things out. And Therese just got triggered about a week ago. And you want to share what happened, Therese? I know, helped trigger that. But, you know, we built the groundwork. We built the groundwork for Michael. Michael is the person I did a call on Monday who has been working with a few people. I've been testing this. But, Therese, why don't you share what happened?
Last Sunday, Michael and I got together and had a healing session, which was very, very good. And I felt very comfortable with him. I felt a lot of love. And what's interesting is during the healing session, Michael heard a deep male voice very, very clearly say, "She is a lovely woman." And he relayed that to me. And my feeling at the time was, he's here for a reason. And Michael felt he was from the Raw group. That's the impression he got. And I felt that he had come to help with the healing. I also felt that we should ask him questions. I wanted to talk with him and ask him questions. What is your name? Where are you from? Do you have anything to say to us? On and on and on. That's my nature. Be that as it may, on Monday, and I am using the techniques Michael has taught me and the techniques you have taught me, Lynn, and I've been using them in my healing exercises 2 to 3 times every single day faithfully. I meditate every single day faithfully using the techniques you taught me. It has been absolutely, I can't believe what has happened in the course of 1 week. When I meditate, I go to the center of the universe. I am with Father God, Mother God, Divine Source, Christ Consciousness. On Monday, it was as if they took a paintbrush and painted my body with a pink healing substance up one side and down the other. And the thought came to me, this is completing your healing. And the feeling of peace and joy and love was so tremendous. I felt my chest would burst. I don't have the words to express to you what I really felt. On Tuesday, in my meditative state, I went back to the center of the universe, and Father God, Mother God, Divine Source, Christ Consciousness placed a pearlescent oval on the inside of me in my chest area. Then a seal was taken and placed over that area. And my feeling was that this was done for my inner healing, my spiritual healing, that this would heal the karma and heal the spiritual wounds that I have experienced. And again, I felt so completely loved. I felt they were holding me in their arms. And then I felt electricity being brought in from all around and encircled by angels. And at no point was I afraid. It was complete, total peace and love. On Wednesday, I had a pain come back. And by the way, I have not taken any pain medication since Sunday, since my healing. Wednesday, I had some pain come back, and Michael and I talked again and had another session. When I did my meditation and went to the center of the universe, in the area where I had the pain, a gauze was wrapped, and it was filled with light, and it was also sparkling. And the sparkles were like live essences, live little beings. And it was wrapped around the areas where my pain was. And I felt that go into me. And it was so much better after that. Then on Thursday, during my healing session, I again went to the center of the universe, and there was a light so bright, it was spinning so very fast. I was in the center of the sphere, and I was not moving, but the sphere was turning, spinning so fast, I felt completely protected and safe. And I felt that I was being told that this sphere, this aura of light, was being put around me. And as it spun faster and faster and faster, it hardened. And I was told that nothing could penetrate that sphere, that I would always be protected. On
hey, Therese,
Friday, during
Therese, listen. I don't want you to read through all of that because we're running out of time to do the personal and planetary healing session.
Okay.
What I really wanted people to get, you know, see, the thing about it is your experience is unique to you. And you sound like you're an Elohim starseed. I mean, I'm just guessing that. I may not be true. But the kind of experiences you're describing, going to the center of the universe, feeling that is like moving to a high celestial realm. And many people won't have that kind of experience. They'll have a different experience. But whatever, each person's going to have an experience unique to themselves for their next step. And I remember when I was younger, and I was like me being a raw wanderer, when I hear somebody say what you're saying, I would say, I probably said something in my head like, what a wacko. But I'm not saying that. You're not a wacko. It's very real. But I just want people to know that it's the difference between a starseed experience and a wanderer experience. Like a wanderer experience is like having, aha, I see how this fits together, and putting together wisdoms and suddenly feeling centered in themselves. Whereas an Elohim goes really out there and has that experience of the universe. But what is the most important aspect is that for each of us, there's a next step to be opened up to. And that the calls that we're doing, these calls have the energy attached to them that if you keep riding it, can help trigger you to your next step, whatever it is. And somebody might have the kind of experience you're having. Somebody might have the kind of experience that's different than that. And it's because we're all unique and we're at different places on this huge cosmic track. It's going to be different for all of us. It's just that it's going to be the next step. And I think the most important thing is that I think you heard us probably 10 months ago or something, right? Would you say that?
8 or 9 months ago on George Noy, but when there's something for me to say, I saw a drop of water fall in the ocean and I saw the ripples of the waves.
Yeah.
The ocean changed into the universe. Mm-hmm. Every thought, word, every deed, every action that each and every one of us does ripples across the universe. And that applies to all of us, no matter where you're at and what level you're at. And if you think about that, that's how we can uplift all of us. And when you think about that, that is so profound. It just gives me chills.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And it's certainly something that I've come to understand, that people think of success oftentimes as I'm a healer, I'm a this, I'm a that, or I'm another thing. But in fact, your greatest success oftentimes will go totally unnoticed by the world, because you can be the liaison, another liaison from the higher realms into this realm, and hold that space. And by doing so, you will have a profound impact on the life around you. And that learning that who you are right now and your experiences right now and your circumstances right now are just temporary, and that you have the ability to move through those and have things be better, not only be better in your life, but to realize the difference you can make and how powerful
you can be in changing the universe, or adding to it, or changing, contributing to this realm. And even though no one notices, you'll know. And you have to be start off with being content to knowing you're doing it, not looking for the recognition aspect, because that's a hook that gets you drawn back in to this realm. And Therese, thanks for coming forth and sharing that, and I look forward to hearing about your future development, because I think you're destined to be somebody that's going to do some great things. And
may I say one other thing, Liz?
Nope. Take 20 seconds and say it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I asked yesterday because I know who I am now, and I asked, what am I supposed to do? And I was shown what my walk of life will be. And it is through music, singing, songwriting, writing books, and talking with people my course is, that's how I am supposed to help people. That's all.
Great. Okay, thank you for sharing. And, you know, I got an email from, let me see here, a couple of emails coming in, and one is from Jean, who was doing a reading and got a lightning bolt. I think Michael and I are going to have to end up doing a workshop, because if I keep talking about him, he is not going to be able to handle it. We got a email from Sija in England, wants me to come over to England. But Sija, nobody's going to come to see me. That's the problem. It's kind of like I'm not famous enough and I don't have enough money enough to do it. It's like, keep inviting people to our calls and buy some, you know, I told people, get some of the Creator God book and just loan them out to people and start developing interest. And then when people are interested, there's enough people, somebody will support me coming over. But, you know, a lot of people say, come here, come there. And I do it, nothing happens, because I'm just a normal person. In fact, I'm probably a difficult person to be around. And a few years ago, I said, every time I go somewhere, everybody drops out, because the human side comes out, and I'm human. Hang on a second now. We've got another question here. Let's see. Carla had sent something that she asked me to read. I'll read it. We all come from love. We all come from love, and unto love we shall return. We all come from love, and unto love we shall return. Like a river flowing into the ocean, like a beam of light returning to the sun. Thank you, Carla. And then we have here Joshua in Austin said, have there ever been Elohim Ra hybrids intentionally created? You know what? I don't think at that level of expansion you can create a hybrid. But I do think that we on this line who are experiencing the energies of the line are hybriding ourselves. But I don't want to use the word hybrid. It's not the best word. That's a genetic manipulation. It's kind of like, it doesn't matter what you create. As soon as it comes, what happens is when an Elohim and a Ra soul get into affiliation, for example, I have a feeling that Daphne has Elohim roots in her, and I have Ra roots. So that's part of what stimulated this whole thing to happen, because I started to get the knowledge of how things worked, and I was proving it to myself. But she didn't have the wisdom at least at that time, to make something, to create something, but I did, and then I committed to it, and I said, this is important. So I don't think you could, you can intentionally create hybrids, although there are people who are very old souls that most definitely have energetic connections to both groups, okay? Now, I want to go through our healing list here, and as we do this, I want all of you to focus your energy, focus our group energy, focus our source's energy. We're operating as a huge team, and we're going to send the light to some of those people that are having challenges in their physical bodies. And let's start out with Carla. Is that okay, Carla?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's start out with Carla, who is has a skin graft and spinal issues that she's had for a long time. And that's, where is the location of the skin graft, Carla?
It starts at the very tip of one hip and goes all the way to the very tip of the other hip. And I'm 5'3" and 150 pounds, so you can imagine that's a meaty measurement. And
yeah,
quite a big skin graft. And the reason I'm having difficulties now is the original skin graft did great, but in order to lie so that air got to the source of the skin graft, you know, the skin from which all the new skin was feeding, I had to lie completely on one hip and get the other hip, you know, give it air. So there are like two sutures, and all of those sutures all the way around that didn't make it because I was lying on them and the pressure was heavy. So now I'm having to go back and forth on a Clinitron bed, giving one side the air and the other side the therapy of the bed, and then reversing it and doing that all day. So, God willing, and I know that God does will it, all will be well, but it's just a matter of time. And thanks everybody who has lifted me up through this time that's been difficult at times with the energy of your loving thoughts and prayers. It's been wonderful. And by the way, when I want you to read that again next week, and we can end the show singing it. I think it would be a beautiful thing for all of us to sing at the end of every show. If you look at it, it's sort of what we're all about. And it's a simple little thing, and it's mesmerizing when you do it. And you can really feel the group energy moving in that song. So think about it, and if you like the idea, maybe we can sing it next week. Get started,
okay.
Everybody, learning it.
We'll have to do a rehearsal.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
All right. And then I want to send healing to Lisa in San Francisco. Let's see, wait just a moment. I'm going too fast. Let's just work on Carla's skin graft. And just everybody focus on Carla's lower back where this graft is having problems and see it working, see it coming together, seeing it healing, and see Carla healthy and totally functional. And we'll put Lisa in San Francisco in the light for healing of all her physical issues. We'll put Carol in Sacramento. Let's take a moment and see her body free of any pneumonia and any pathogens that are making her sick. And Maggie in Kansas City, dealing with itching, Maggie. So it sounds like, let's see, what does it say here? Healing for what's making her itch. And for Marcia in Panorama City, to her mom, who's moving to a senior citizen center, and it's hard for her. Invite your mom to listen to our Sunday call. Maybe she'll feel part of it. Kathy in Kansas. Put in the light, selling her home and finding a good rental. Pat in Birmingham. Sending the light to her daughter and her daughter's relationship, which is difficult. Barbara in Twin Falls, Idaho. To be a shining light in the world and to love and bless all beings and to express gratitude for all her blessings. I am a powerful light being, extending unlimited love out to the universe. Thank you for your service and inspiration. Thank you. And for everyone else who I didn't read, and for all of you that didn't put anything into the healing list today, or have hopes and dreams or obstacles, we're going to take a moment of silence and realize the universe is telepathic. It can hear you. And right now, I want you to put in your mind the things that you would like to shift and change for yourself and the hopes and prayers you have for other people right in this moment. And know you're being heard. This is always for the highest good of all concerned and honoring free will.
Hello.
You know, we've been going for a long time. We have about 7 minutes left. And let's right now bring in a greeting through Terry. And we ask right now that this energy that we're creating around our planet right in this moment prevail, proliferate, and wake up all of those people that are waiting for it. And Terry, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I hear you. Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect each person on this line, and any negativity be taken to the highest realms of light and transmuted for the highest good of all concerned. We see ourselves in the flow of energy radiating from the center of the universe, through the galaxies, through the Milky Way, through the solar system, through the outer energy fields of planet Earth, through our bodies, and into the center of the earth. And right now, we invoke a group energy connection while maintaining the sovereign integrity of our souls. And we invite those sources that are positive, service to others, honoring the law of one, to join with us, and we create a protected space that only the positive has access to, and anything not of that nature must leave now, and we invite our sources to bring forth the message through Terry Brown. Thank you.
We greet you in the love light of the one infinite creator. We are delighted to be with each and every one of you. This is Sunday, May 26th, 2013. And this is a sacred moment when we all take a moment and can connect. And our love and the love of all can permeate and remind everyone how treasured they are, how treasured their existence and their experiences are. And it is through these moments, which not only on the line or connecting during the calls, but in your own sacred silence, within your own moments, you can take a moment and reset to the love, to the stillness, to a space which makes room for the changes that you're asking for. And by asking, you are putting it out to the universe, asking for those things that you wish to create, to become possible, and to make the space within your own life for those things you wish to change, to be reset, and to grow anew into new potentials that you are asking for. By asking, you are making a space. You are putting it there. You are getting the help, getting our help. You are making it known what you wish to create. This is a sacred moment, and we love you each more than you can possibly imagine. We leave, but we do not leave.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Terry, for being here and holding the space for all of this to happen. And Carla as well.